Welcome to the December 17th meeting of the Board of Public Works. I appreciate everybody's attendance today. Let me start by wishing everyone a happy holiday season. I hope you started it off well with a joyful Thanksgiving. It's a time, of course, to spend with family and loved ones. It's also a time as we Maryland Stronger Together. That's our initiative, our campaign this year. The idea, the belief that neighbors can help neighbors by reaching out, lending a hand. This is the end of year time for you to consider your charitable giving, and now's the time to do it. Nonprofits certainly are in greater need this year than perhaps any year in the last several years. So as Marylanders, we are very generous people, both with our time and our checkbook. So think about that in the year end. But I also, as I said, I do wish that you and your family have a wonderful end of year holiday season and a productive, prosperous, and healthy new year. With that, I'm just going to turn it over to the treasurer, and then we'll launch into the agenda for today, starting with the Maryland Department of Transportation. And just a reminder, I am Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown and not Martin O'Malley. And it's a pleasure to preside over today's meeting of the Board of Public Works. Madam Treasurer.
Thank you. Governor, first of all, it's good to have you here. It's great to have the trees and the lights up. I was looking at the tree downstairs. The Secretary and I were. It really is terrific. And to see the things made by the children and the citizens from around the state. It's really not that one, but also the big one downstairs. It's really, really quite beautiful. However, I did hear you might be interested as a citizen of the National Capital Area that they're saying that perhaps the first snow in our area will be this evening or tomorrow morning. So we'll see what happens.
Well, admittedly, I'll jump in. You know, the governor was in India, and it's emergencies that give state leadership an opportunity to show their leadership. I was hoping for the big snowstorm last week. Wouldn't have been of my making, so. But it's coming now, just in time.
Maybe,
the governor's
maybe,
return.
Maybe, just in time for his return, yes. I see that Deputy Comptroller is here. Great.
So last week, or a week ago or so, something like that, I had an opportunity to celebrate my mid-century birthday. I'm feeling pretty good about it. I share that with you only to say that I'm willing to share with you my age, but I wouldn't ask treasurer to do the same. But I would ask all of you to join me in welcoming and in acknowledging the treasurer's birthday today. Happy birthday.
I have one of those birthdays that people can remember, a day of infamy for a number of different reasons, of course, for Pearl Harbor, but also I'm 68 years old this morning and proud to be.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see. What do we got here? Time seems unclear. Okay, let's go into the Department of Transportation's agenda. Good morning.
Good morning, Governor and Treasurer. Yes, we might have our snow this evening, but I'm glad we didn't have one last week here, Governor. But second.
We just launched into the end dive. We tapped dance, sang happy birthday as long as we could. It's a treasurer's birthday today. And you want to start with any opening remarks before we Okay.
You know, the comptroller and I share anniversaries, but not wedding anniversaries, but not birthdays. You can't do everything in fandom.
Okay. Good morning. For the record,
I'd like to make a statement. First of all, happy birthday.
Thank you.
I hope. As the state's tax collector, I should say, in advance, thank you for all your Christmas shopping and your holiday shopping. And for those of you that choose to shop over the Internet, I'd like to just suggest that I have some blank forms. Like to help with the sales tax. I know that I've mentioned over the last couple of weeks the college football season and how proud I am of teams like the Towson Tigers and the Salisbury Seagulls, who have tremendous success, don't get very much visibility. They unfortunately, both of those great teams did not go very far in the playoffs. But I know that they brought a lot of enjoyment and visibility and were good ambassadors for the state of Maryland, and I want to congratulate them. Even though I was in the Army many years ago, I want to wish Navy good luck in their big game.
What?
I'm shop local, baby. But the other team that I love to pat on the back at this time of the year is our team of Maryland retailers. They've gotten off to a great start. The Black Friday and post-Thanksgiving weekend showed increased activity. It's a very encouraging sign. These Maryland stores, frankly, have been hammered by the recession, and they desperately need this shopping season between now and the end of December in order, frankly, to survive for many of them. And I've begun a campaign called Shop Maryland for the Holidays, traveling to towns across the state, urging Marylanders to do something a little counter-trendy, I guess. Most people apparently enjoy shopping now over the Internet. I don't particularly like it that much because you're sitting there by yourself in front of a computer at 10 o'clock at night looking at a screen with something you can't touch or handle the product. So I'm encouraging people to, you know, I say be patriotic. Get out there and support these local Maryland businesses. And it's a great experience. You have a warm, supportive, friendly, helpful, wonderful customer service staff people in these stores. You get a diversity of products. And you help the economy because when you spend a dollar at a local Maryland store, 70 cents of that stays in the community. And gosh knows these businesses need it. They employ half a million of our neighbors and friends. And so I'm out there challenging all my Marylanders, get off this cyber kick and get on to Main Street, and you'll have a great shopping experience, in my opinion, better than over the Internet. And I often say, has anybody here in the state ever seen a Little League baseball team sponsored by Amazon.com? They don't care about Maryland. But I'll tell you, every Little League team in Maryland is sponsored generally by a Maryland retailer. And they have Beachley hardware on the back. So the philanthropy that these companies contribute to our state, that it's not just Little League, it's Boys and Girls Clubs, soup kitchens, and every other philanthropy in addition to employment, I just can't emphasize to you how great the customer service is in these Maryland businesses, and it's so much more satisfying than the cold keyboard of Internet sales. So it's a win-win for consumers, and I encourage all of you to spread the holiday cheer, not just to your family and friends, but to everyone who benefits from the Maryland retail sector. And if we do that, we'll make this holiday season a winning season for all of us. And Governor, it's great to see you. We saw each other last night. Mm-hmm. And sorry, once again, that I had to interrupt the flow of events. But thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you, Ms. Comptroller.
Good morning. For the record, Beverly Swaim-Staley, Secretary, Maryland Department of Transportation. Thank you for taking our agenda items this morning. So I can go to another event in Washington. We do have some items on the other agendas, and Daryl Mobley, Deputy Secretary, will be stepping in when I leave. So thank you very much. On our MDOT agenda today, we have 6 items. Item 4 has been revised, and we're happy to try to answer your questions.
Council about item 6, please.
Yes, item 6 goes along with the announcement that was made by the governor regarding expansion of BWI Airport. And I think we have Paul here who can come up and talk about this. Of course, it's related. It's the expansion that we have to do, what's called the areas B and C at the airport. This, of course, is in because of the merger with AirTran and Southwest. And I think it's no secret that the airport is going through its second record year. And we're very excited about the merger, and Paul can talk a little bit about the specifics.
Good morning. Paul Wiedefeld, Executive Director of BWI Marshall. I thought I'd just give you a little bit of background on why the need for the project and the need to do it quickly. Basically, it consists of three elements. One is on our Concourse C. It's very it's our oldest part of the terminal. Just to give you a sense of some of the issues we're up against there. The latest technology from TSA cannot even be used in that part of the terminal at the security checkpoint. It doesn't fit within the ceilings. The other issue that we have on the C concourse, if you ever go down there, it's actually very narrow and then gets wide. Well, you can imagine if there was ever an event down there where we had to basically everyone had to egress one time, it gets, you know, right to a choke point right at the C. So that's one issue that we're trying to deal with there. In addition, the hold rooms are very tight in that area, so it limits our growth on Concourse C. The second is, as the Secretary mentioned, with Southwest and AirTran merger. On November 15th, AirTran moved off of the D concourse over to the AB terminal and basically has put quite a bit of stress on that facility, everything from the roadway to the passenger screening to the passenger ticketing to the baggage screening, to the point where literally we had to add 4 screening checkpoints on the arrivals level. So it's sort of almost counterintuitive that you would enter the terminal from the area that you pick up your bags. But that's how tight we are in that part of the terminal. And then finally is the need to grow. Basically, that existing terminal is designed for roughly 235 flights a day. This summer, we're very lucky to have 246 flights a day there. So you can imagine some of the stress we'll have at that time. So what we propose is a project that deals with all three of those issues, the widening of C concourse and the elimination of the security checkpoint at that point, creating a new checkpoint right between the concourses C and D where the existing Delta counter sits today. Delta will be moving Monday night into Tuesday over to the D concourse where AirTran used to be. And then the connector, which is basically a secure side connection between the B concourse and the C concourse, which will open up 14 additional gates to Southwest and there are 26 gates on AB. It will have moving sidewalks, concession space, new restrooms, and things of that sort. The bottom line is, we're concerned about maintaining our Easy Come, Easy Go brand, and that basically that's threatened if we don't make it a good experience for our customers. The second is that Southwest is moving to a larger aircraft starting this March with the 737-800, which basically handles roughly 40 more people per plane, so we need to deal with that issue. We want to hit this construction season, and to be frank, the quicker we can get this connector built, the quicker Southwest can expand at BWI Airport. So with that, I'd be glad to take any questions. We recommend that you approve.
I appreciate the summary. Sounds like the airport continues to thrive and do exceptionally well. That's fantastic. Good work over there.
I have a question since you brought it up. I mean, some of the difficulties of handling our great success. Phase one provides for 9 new passenger lane security checkpoints. Mm-hmm. And I think, actually, BWI, Thurgood Marshall, does extremely well in terms of moving people. But the security agency call the shots, and how many of those lanes are actually manned? Mm-hmm. And that's right. So they're not all fully manned when you go now or staffed. So we're building 9 new ones. So are we, in fact, going to get through faster?
You will, because the way that they do it, actually, is they will not support. They pay for those, and they will not support that unless they can man them. So they man it at different times. So if you're there at 4:35 in the morning, they're all manned, and that's our peak period. So at different times, you will see it. But their goal is to keep the passenger throughput under 10 minutes. So that's how they manage.
Okay,
their
so is that the general goal? So we can tell 6 months from now, 9 months from now, how we're doing by that indicator. Okay, that's the first one. The other one I just want to touch on, the construction of the new VC passenger security checkpoint connecting terminal will eliminate the egress constraint, which is not in accordance with current building codes.
Meaning that we can't expand. We can't expand. We cannot grow. We cannot put more air service on Concourse C, given current fire lanes.
But we meet code.
We meet it now, but we can't expand.
Thank you.
Sorry. We want to make sure we meet code.
Continue to meet it. Thank you very much. It caused a little concern.
You have anything, Ms. Compro?
No.
On this? If any other questions, comments on the MDOT agenda, this item, or any other item? Okay, hearing none. The treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Compro. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Thank you very much. MDOT's agenda is approved, and please represent us well at the, where did you say you're going?
Board of Trade.
Board of Trade. Excellent. Thank you very much. Let's go now to the Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 17 items on the Secretary's agenda, one report of an emergency procurement. Ready for your questions.
Why don't you tell us a little about the emergency procurement? That's item one?
No, actually, it's item one in the appendix.
Oh, in the appendix. Okay.
Yes.
Yep.
And that was a flooding situation at the Department of Human Resources, Social Services Department in Prince George's County. Is Ms. Johnson here from DHR? Who's here from DHR?
I'm Renia
Harlow. Oh, you want us to come up to the podium and be able to answer questions? This was a flood that happened in September 23rd, 2010, and they needed mold remediation and document restoration, so they immediately had to get a contractor on board. Could you introduce yourself again for the record and then answer the question?
Good morning. My name is Renia Harvey, Chief of Administrative Operations for the Department of Human Resources. This emergency procurement was caused by a flood which occurred on September 23rd, 2010 at 7 p.m. It affected 85% of our lease space. We worked with the landlord to bring a company in that was not sufficient to do mold remediation and document rescue. The reason we had to do document rescue, one of the things we didn't want to lose is those documents, because we would have had to have families come in and resupply us with thousands of documents for services, as well as it would have affected our auditing process. We have to keep those documents on site for federal and state audits. So we worked with the Department of General Services to bring in a vendor that specialized in mold remediation and documents restoration and rescue.
Governor, I think when the Board of Public Works procurement advisor looked at this emergency, I don't think she felt there was any problem with the emergency being declared and how the contractor was procured. I think there is a problem with the late report to the board because the emergency was September 2010. But I do believe the procurement advisor has worked with the Department of Human Resources and has reminded them of getting their reports to the Board of Public Works as within the 60 days instead of 14 months.
So what are the one, two, three things that they'll do differently?
What had happened is the department erroneously believed that they had to have all the costs in before they reported to the board. I did inform that once the contractor's name is on a dotted line, they needed to report to the board immediately. If they had to modify down the road, they could come back to the board at that time, but they didn't need to have all their costs determined until they came to the Board of Public Works. So they did understand that the restriction, they were mistaken in their belief with that restriction, and they promised in the future to bring them in a timely manner.
Great. Anything else? Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Anything from any of the members of the board on either item one on the appendix or any other items on the Secretary's agenda?
Thank you.
Hearing none, seeing none. Treasurer moves approval. I'll second that. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Secretary's agenda is approved. Thank you very much. And we'll move down to the next one, which is the Department of Natural Resources.
Ms. Lisa Ward's here.
Yeah. Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Mr. Comptroller, and the happiest of birthdays to the Treasurer. Lisa Ward, for the record, today we have 12 items on our agenda and are here to answer any questions that you have.
Okay, hearing none, seeing none. Fred moves approval.
I'll second it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Hearing none. Department of Natural Resources agenda is approved. Thank you. And let's go to the Department of Budget and Management.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are 11 items on the Department of Budget and Management's agenda for today. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
All of these health
contracts.
I mean, the bottom line is we're going to see some final contracts going out.
We have three items which extend contracts. They're items 6, 7, and 8. They're extending contracts for 6 months, and that's basically to allow the procurements to be completed. Item 6 is a contract that continues the inmate medical services contract. Item 8 is applicable to the mental health care contract, and 7, I'm sorry, is applicable to the mental health contract, and 8 is applicable to the utilization review. So, yes, they are being extended. Actually, for the medical services and the utilization contracts, both of those have been merged into a new procurement. The responses to the new RFP are due back to the Department of Budget Management next week on December the 13th. So we expect to bring those items to the board in April. And we're allowing for a 60 to 90-day transition period. The anticipated start of the new contract will be July 1 of 2012. The other item is the mental health RFP. That RFP will go out by the end of the week. The responses will be due back in early February. And, again, that's a contract that we'll be bringing back to the board in April with an anticipated start date of July 1.
Yes, thank you. I think I voted for one extension for these contracts. Then I was asked to vote for a second extension, which I believe I did. Then I was asked to vote for a third extension. And here we are being asked for a fourth extension. And I guess my concern, Madam Secretary, I know we're going through some transitions, but we're talking almost a quarter of $1 billion in these extensions when you add them together, $62 million today, $240.5 million for the four extensions. And I know these are complex contracts. I know they're specialized services and they're sensitive and understand you've had to step in, frankly, assume control from the agency of the procurements. And I support that because I think the earlier procurements, you correctly noted, were botched by the agency. So we have this situation, but I have to admit I'm concerned that we're exceeding the cost of the original contract by a significant amount to extend these contracts. In other words, the original contracts were for $170 million. This now is $240 million in extensions. Why is that a bad thing? Now, obviously, it's a bad thing because the taxpayers are spending somewhat in the dark here in the absence of any bid competition that could afford us the opportunity to get the services at a better price. And my concern, I guess, is I understand you're saying that we'll have the new vendors in place by July 1st of next year, but what basis should we have confidence in that?
Well, as you said, these are very complex procurements. They have hundreds of specifications. They have numerous technical requirements. The Department of Budget and Management did take them over from public safety. I would say that there has been a learning curve involved in this process. I would also indicate that even once the procurements were out on the street, there has been an inordinate amount of time spent responding to questions from vendors. My staff has had to respond to over 300 questions and provide additional follow-up. All of that is basically additional information that has to be provided to vendors. That kind of extends the process. At the same time, I would point out that we have been involved in other complex procurements, including such things as the drug testing contract, including the employee and the retiree pharmacy benefits contract, you know, an item then that has gone to have to go before the Board of Contract Appeals. All of that has impacted our ability to go forward and get these out. But having said that, you know, I would agree with you that these have taken longer than what I would like to have seen as well. But at the same time, my overall goal has been to make sure that we get these right and that we do what's in the best interest of the taxpayers of the state of Maryland. And, you know, I'm confident that we're going to be back in April and that we're going to have the best deal.
Well, I have a lot of confidence in your abilities, but I guess what I'm concerned about is what you just mentioned in passing. And obviously, Mr. Lieberknight and others are talented and have expertise in these areas. But with the extraordinary involvement of your agency now in these complicated procurements, you mentioned the pharmaceutical benefits. You do, as a matter of course, the health care contracts. We're really, you're involved in state procurement to a new and extraordinary level, your particular agency. My concern is, do you have enough staff? Do you have enough expertise? You mentioned the questions that needed to be answered. I've always operated under the thought that any kind of question should be answered within weeks, not months. But my understanding is that because of the workload, you're in a very difficult situation. I guess my question here is, as you assume all these new responsibilities, I think one pen has been transferred from corrections to accommodate the additional procurement workload, but shouldn't we be staffing up considerably more in your agency if you're going to shoulder this workload?
Well, certainly, I guess when the initial decision was made in regard to transferring this workload from public safety to the Department of Budget Management, there was the transfer of one pen. Obviously, in development of this year's budget, I'm assessing what my overall needs are going to be, and I'll make requests, you know, as are appropriate. In regard to responding to questions, I would say, for the most part, we do respond, and we respond in a timely manner. Obviously, there was one incident, I think, where we dropped the ball, but my agency has been very responsive to the questions that we get from vendors.
Okay, but I'm also talking about complaints after the fact. I believe, it's when a company protests. We're talking now, in some instances, 6 or 7 months.
That's the one incident that I'm referring to in regard to the protest.
Yeah,
and obviously, that is a protest that has been continuing. That is not in today's agenda. And if you want to have an offline conversation with them about that particular contract, Mr. Comptroller, I'll be happy to do that.
Okay. All I'm referencing here, I'm on your side, is that you may need extra resources in order to handle these additional responsibilities, and I think the public would benefit, obviously, from it, because we would avoid the situation that we have today, where we're approving not the first, second, or third, but the fourth extension of a contract, totaling in the extensions 40% more than the base of the original contract. I'm happy to have a further conversation. I don't want to drag it out. I'm just saying that I would certainly understand if you said we need, because of our involvement now, we need more help. And
as we develop the governor's fiscal year 13 budget, that's an item that's under consideration for discussions.
Governor, if I could just throw something in. I happen to fully agree with the concerns of the comptroller, and thought he was going to bring this up. I'm pleased that he brought it up. And more generically, this board has cut several billion dollars from the budget in the last few years, and the legislature and the governor have cut billions more on annual basis from the budget. And, of course, we don't know what the federal government's going to be doing and how much more we may have to end up cutting in order to stay in balance. And when we do this, it does concern me, and you've, Madam Secretary, heard this concern before, but I want to state it again for the record. It does concern me that we often tend to cut more, indeed to ream out, the infrastructure parts of the government, the budget department, the Department of General Services, the IT department, the things that the people don't see, in order to protect the services that go directly to the people. But in doing that, I am concerned that it has two impacts. First of all, just in terms of procurement process, getting the procurements done and then overseeing the contracted out services becomes much more difficult and less timely. And when the governor is concerned about red tape, it may be that some, it's not really red tape, it's simply insufficient people to do the work. And the other is that we will then tend to try to contract out things that we had done before, actually less expensively, with public employees, but it does get something off the immediate budget. But as in almost every agency of government, and I must admit juvenile services also always jumps to the fore of my mind, we don't always do sufficient oversight of the contracts and the carrying out of public responsibilities. And so I just think that sometimes we have to just make the extra effort to explain to the people that, yes, we have, they may think government isn't good, but government can be very good if it's well resourced and can do its work efficiently. You can't do work efficiently when you have three people doing the work of 17. And that's just my concern.
You know, I mean, we're right now in the middle of budget discussions with the governor, and every day we are presenting to him a balanced approach to the cuts. And as you know, Madam Treasurer and Mr. Comptroller, both from the Board of Public Works and prior to that on appropriations, we look for areas to cut that unfortunately have to go to both the infrastructure capacity of government functions and also to the services and programs that we deliver. I do want to sort of highlight that in the grand scheme of things, the larger cuts are in the programs and services that are delivered. I mean, you know, Medicaid reductions and what we ask the hospitals to and other providers.
Well, the largest sum of money is in those programs.
So, the Maryland public certainly is seeing fewer services from government over the last few years because of these cuts. But it is a balanced approach, and every department has been asked to look for, efficiencies and eliminating pins. Sometimes, we're perfect and we get it right. Sometimes, maybe in retrospect, we could have held on to that pin, but it's an ongoing effort, and we're in the middle of a budget cycle now, and as Secretary Foster mentioned, we'll be looking at that. My question is, how much have these extensions actually cost? Had there not been extensions versus where we are today?
The extensions of the contract basically are to provide monies to continue to provide the services. Basically, we would have been spending approximately the same amounts if contracts had been in place.
Okay, so
the services,
that's a point to be made. So the process isn't pretty, I guess.
Yes.
But so the question is, what is that cost the taxpayers? And what does it cost the recipient of the services? It sounds like it's no additional to the taxpayers. It sounds like the services continue to be provided, but there's probably a lot of stress going on in your department.
Correct.
With the learning curve, et cetera. So you're in the middle of developing your budget. You're going to look at whether or not you need more staffing in this area so that we can improve the process, make it more efficient going forward. But the point to emphasize is this has not cost the taxpayers additional money by the extension.
Correct.
Okay.
And I just, you know, I understand both the comptroller and the treasurer's concern, but, you know, I just want to reiterate that, you know, this administration basically has been faced with putting the budget together during a period where we've had the Great Recession since the Great Depression.
Absolutely.
And, you know, with the board's actions and what we've done in the General Assembly, we've cut over $7 billion. In terms of positions, we've eliminated 5,300 positions. And last year, the General Assembly told us to come in with cutting another 450 positions before January. So we have done all of this in a very difficult time, and we try to do it in a balanced way, as the Lieutenant Governor indicated.
I could not agree more with everything you've said, except with an addendum that the people have to understand, the taxpayers have to understand that there is a real cost to all this cutting, as well as the need to balance, meeting the need to balance the budget. And I don't think that they see that as often. I remember in the 1991 recession, my neighbors and I finally saw it when they cut the library hours, because finally it hit us. And I am concerned that, well, we're cutting the infrastructure of government and people don't see it as much. They're not as aware of what's really happening. That's my only, my fingerprints are all over these cuts too. I understand that.
Yeah, and let me just comment for the record also. We don't really know what we are avoiding or not avoiding as far as cuts, because with these extensions that are before us, we're not getting the benefit of a competitive bid process. That's my point. We don't. Maybe the bid process would result in higher bids, and you end up with savings. But the problem is we're in the dark. And once, maybe twice, I don't know, three times, shame on me, four times, for almost $250 million, you know, I hope for the taxpayers that we're getting a really good deal, but we just don't know. And that's why we have a procurement process like this. Otherwise, we'd just roll everything over in extensions all the time. We don't. We get out and bid.
And so in April, we will bring the new contracts back, and that's when we can assess.
So, look forward to it. And,
okay.
Okay, any other discussion on that item or any other item on the DBM agenda? Oh, yes. I have a question on number 11.
Good morning.
So, item 11 is a request for approval of a settlement with Dr. Frisilli versus the University of Maryland University College. And we have the representatives from the University of Maryland here.
Good morning. Thomas Falk, Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the University of Maryland, University College.
I'm George Schumer, Chief Operating Officer.
Chief Operating Officer of UMUC?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So what are we doing here?
Well, Your Honor, briefly, this is a request for a settlement. It was a complex and protracted civil litigation matter that involved national origin, retaliation, race discrimination, and a claim that the university violated the free speech rights of a former employee. And we're requesting the settlement in the amount of $430,000. We reached that settlement after the university pursued the matter to the motion for summary judgment. Unfortunately, the university wasn't successful on the motion for summary judgment. We then entered into a mediation before the U.S. District Court. And based on the comments of Judge Massetti, who was overseeing the case, as well as Charles Day, the magistrate, we reached a settlement in the case.
And so we're going to give $430,000 to, is it Dr. Perseau?
Well, Your Honor, if I could explain, the $430,000 is actually...
I love the... believe me, you don't want to make me into a judge. I'm sorry. So the $430,000 comes from UMUC, I take it?
Yes, sir.
And goes to whom?
The $430,000 is actually split. There will be an amount that will go to Dr. Prasad in the amount of roughly $130,000. The remaining amount will go to his attorneys, which were his attorney's fees in the case.
Okay. So I see Dr. Prasad's case, and I obviously any comments that are discriminatory in nature, I abhor. The question I have is, were you aware that this suit, which we're voting, I guess, today to give $430,000 for, is almost a mirror image of a similar suit that Dr. Prasad filed against Earl Richardson, the president of Morgan State University, and the dean of the business school there when he was denied tenure?
Actually, Mr. Comptroller, it's actually not, although some of the allegations are similar, it's not a mirror image of the case. Dr. Prasad worked for Morgan State University in the 90s, and at that time, he was denied tenure. He did file a discrimination suit against the university.
What was that
time.
Based on?
It was based on his failure to receive tenure.
And what did he claim he was denied tenure for?
He claimed that the dean of the business school at that time had made several racist remarks and that actually contributed to his failure to receive tenure at that time. The court's decision, however...
Can I just interrupt for a minute?
Sure.
Isn't that exactly what is being alleged here?
Well, in this particular case, Your Honor, Mr. Comptroller, the allegations are that Dr. Prasad, that when we renewed his contract, that there were two decisions here. There was one decision to renew his contract for a shorter period of time. There was then a second decision to end his employment. He claims that both of those decisions were due to discrimination, and that possibly that second decision was also retaliatory in nature because he had filed an internal discrimination complaint with the university.
Okay, I think you're in a difficult position, and I'm probably going to follow your legal advice, but I just have to comment for the record that I think this is an unfortunate situation. And, for an individual to have sued Morgan State University for racial discrimination, not being granted tenure, sued the state of Maryland, Earl Richardson, great leader for our state, gone into the federal district court in Maryland, lost overwhelmingly. Apparently, your predecessors defended Morgan State because there was no merit. Then he appealed to the Fourth Circuit. Also, denied. So wasn't. So here we're being asked on a case that is almost the same charges. We're being asked to vote for $430,000 based on your recommendation that we face higher risk if we go to trial. And I can see that, given this situation. But it's certainly, I almost wish, I guess Joe Curran defended the last case where there was no merit determined. Part of me would like to see justice come out, and truth come out here in a trial. Based on this prior action, which was do you see what I'm talking about here?
Yes, Mr.
Comptroller. We're apparently going to move forward in this, but it's maybe in the great scheme of things, the Board of Public Works, not a lot of money, but I see it as a lot of money. And anyway, probably got myself in enough trouble there, but it just frustrates me that you guys can defend the state in a great way, and we end up paying nothing because there wasn't any merit to it. I'm not saying that's the case here, but I wish in these instances we didn't settle. I wish we litigated so that the truth would come out, and if we have to pay more, so be it, if the state may, in fact, is guilty of what these allegations are. But we're not going to know.
Are you, Mr. Falk?
Yes.
Okay. How long have you been? You're the lead counsel on this?
Yes, Your Honor.
How long have you been leading?
I've actually been with the Attorney General's office since 1993 in the Educational Affairs Division. I worked previously at the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene doing litigation in that unit.
Right. And so I remember back in my days when we litigated, there was sort of a rubric of risk analysis that you did on litigation to make sort of value-based and sort of experience-based decisions on whether it's financially wise to continue with litigation versus settling. I mean, can you just, if you can, I mean, just sort of generically talk about your approach to the decision to settle versus going to litigation?
Sure. In this particular case, what we were looking at was essentially whether or not the plaintiff in this case would be successful with respect to not necessarily all of the claims, but even some of the claims. And unfortunately, the states have been in a particularly difficult position with respect to defending retaliation claims. Because, as you well know, when you're defending a retaliation claim, the retaliation doesn't have to happen as a result of the person's race or national origin. If, in fact, an individual files an internal complaint of discrimination, and then that individual, there's adverse employment action taken against that individual following that complaint, there could be a finding by a trier of fact that, in fact, the employer discriminated. And unfortunately, in this case, what we had with respect to the facts is that we had an individual who received a decision from the employer. He then filed an internal discrimination complaint. When the university investigated that complaint, the investigation took place over a period of months. Unfortunately, the university, however, in working through those issues with this particular employee, wasn't able to fully document the ways in which that was worked out. And so then the plaintiff then claimed that all of the sort of remedial or corrective actions that the university attempted to take with respect to his performance, that these were in fact retaliatory. The additional problems that we had was that, unfortunately, the manager in this case who worked for the university, there were allegations with respect to discriminatory comments that were made both before this discrimination complaint was filed and after the discrimination complaint was filed. So our risk analysis with respect to the retaliation claim was problematic because, unfortunately, a trier of fact could find that this particular manager took this action as a result of the discrimination complaint that was filed. And so we had to assess, we had to look at the attorney's fees that were accumulated to date. We had to look at the possible damages that would have flowed from a determination of liability, and we had to assess whether or not settling the case at this time for this amount was a more reasonable decision rather than exposing the state to liability with damages possibly ranging in the neighborhood of $1 million to $1.5 million.
You said 1993? You started?
Yes.
So it is in your professional judgment that this settlement and what you're recommending is more likely than not going to save the state money in this case.
Yes, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, it is my assessment based on the facts of this case and actually based on the findings of the court in this case as well as the comments of both the judge and the magistrate judge who handled the protracted mediation that a settlement in this case is in the best interest of the state and it's reasonable.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments on this?
No, I'll just say I'm going to vote for this because I recognize, as Lieutenant Governor mentions, you're between a rock and a hard place. But based on the earlier litigation, identical claims, I agree. I don't know who the employee was that was responsible for these comments. They're outrageous if they were made, and I abhor that. But
Mr. Comptroller, that individual no longer works for the university.
Well, that's good, but
Does, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. And I'm sorry, sir, I missed your name. You're the chief
Chief Operating Officer. George,
so are you the one that's responsible for ensuring that the lessons learned from this matter, and one of them is was raised by Mr. Falk, which is, you know, timely, accurate documentation of performance and the basis for personnel decisions. Are you all going through and sort of ensuring that, you know, managers and supervisors and others are, you know, adhering to best practices when it comes to personnel?
Absolutely, we are. We are appalled by what this employee did, who, as Tom mentioned, is no longer with us. We've done extensive training within that particular unit, as well as across the university. We don't like this one bit. We're appalled at what happened. And we don't take this decision lightly either, as I know none of you do. This is a lot of money. And it's money we could spend on something much more worthwhile. But as Tom said, we looked at this, and we just feel that this is a risk mitigation, and that the advice from the Attorney General's office is solid. It's what we need to do. None of us like this. And I can assure you that we have taken this very seriously in terms of making sure that this kind of thing, as best as we're able to, does not happen again. But it does show you how a single employee can make any employer very vulnerable by actions and words that they use that we abhor and that we're not aware of when these things occur.
Anything else on this item? Okay, well, thank you very much. Anything else on any other item? Then we're still on budget and management. Are we still on yours? Okay. Any others? Seeing none, hearing none. Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the treasurer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. DBM calendar is approved for today.
Governor,
yes.
Would the comptroller like to be voted noted as voting yes on the DNR agenda and the secretary's agenda?
It's a housekeeping matter.
Right.
Apparently, I was recorded as. The November 6th meeting is voting no on USM item 3-GM, and the no that I voted was on item 3-GM, sub-item C4, the purchase of the 32 Steinway pianos for Bowie State, and not the other items.
Okay, and then again, we will correct the record on that one, and again, though, on this agenda, though, the DNR agenda and the secretary's agenda, you had to step up, and I just wanted to make sure you had an affirmative vote on those agendas.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Governor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary, for straightening this out, straightening me out there. Okay, University System of Maryland. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Jim Sterling for the University System. We have 10 items on today's agenda. I'd be happy to address any questions.
Okay, hearing nothing. The Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Approved. And we'll go on to the Department of Information Technology.
Secretary Schlanger is here.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Elliot Schlanger, Department of Information Technology. This morning we bring you 5 items on our agenda, and I'll be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Nothing. Comptroller moves approval. Second by the treasurer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, and the final agenda for today is the Department of General Services.
Morning, Mr. Lieutenant Governor. Al Collins, Secretary of Department of General Services. Good morning, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. The Department of General Services has 24 items on our agenda, including one supplemental. We are withdrawing item 11LL. I'll be glad to answer any questions you have at this time. Mr. Lieutenant Governor, I would like to point out, unfortunately, the governor is not here this morning, but we've heard his message about surface parking, and I'm just pleased to present and thank Mr. Jordan Moran from the Department of Natural Resources. We have an item in front of you that talks about Cunningham State Park. We've actually reduced the surface parking by 33%. First time we've done that in a very long time. So just want to show that we are, the DNR, certainly supporting cleaning up of the bay.
Okay.
just want to state for the record that I had something incredibly positive to say about the O'Malley Brown administration on item 11LL, but it was withdrawn.
He'll be back.
Any other comments on any other items?
I'm sure it's not incredibly positive.
Hearing none, the treasurer moves approval, seconded by the comptroller. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? None. Do you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to refer through that.
Well, let's close this out. Approved then.
Okay, excellent. I just wanted to make a general comment that I understand the next board meeting on December 21st has a large number of significant items, and I would mention this to you last night. Lieutenant Governor, that I think to the extent we can balance some of the agenda and move it into January, it would allow for the proper level of review. And I'm looking at video lottery terminals, wetland licenses for nuclear power plants, the pharmacy contract, easement purchases in Point Pleasant, which the extensions of 63 SHA contracts from the audit, and I guess now the anaerobic digester.
Yes, sir.
PCI. To the extent someone can kind of help manage that so that we don't have an imbalance, I would be grateful.
Appreciate your instructions, Mr. Comptroller. We will take that into account. Preparing the record for your meeting this week, so we will take that into account, definitely.
Okay, we have to move. We have to move to adjourn, or
we're just
done. No, you can just appear. Okay, happy holidays, everyone. I know you guys will be
back again.
I won't.
Chief,
thanks.
But
you
know, I'm presiding over the first one of the next
year.
Yeah.
This is
good
for you.
Yeah.
There's the list.
Yeah, that's good.
How you doing?
Thanks.
Bryce, how are you?
Oh, Alan.
Good.